Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you know my number and you know my name. You know racing cars is my favorite game, and you know I can't be beat when I'm in the driver's seat. See, I got a lead foot and gas in my veins. God put a V8 where he should have put brains. There ain't a race I haven't run. There ain't a race I haven't won. And it's been 7 days since I've won a race. And I don't plan on leaving this place till I've won another. Said you cry at home to your mother. See, I got the car, the skill, the crew, the will. God hates a sinner, but he loves a winner. You dare to show your face? Come on, Ace. Let's race. Field and I'm sitting on the pole. Pace car's gone, the green flag drops, 500 miles to go. Let's race.
24 car, left hand side. Go low, you come off. You got him. 17 car, taking a high road.
Well, I ain't good looking and I could have been smarter, but I've been in the lead since this race started. I got it all tied up and put away. I won't be the hero today. You held your own for a lap or two, but then your rookiness started showing through. You ran out of ammunition, dropped like four or five positions. Now your car's getting loose and it's tough to steer. I can see it all clear from my rearview mirror. You're gonna be a statistic, like the 40 other clowns who missed it. So go on, drop the hammer, floor the gas, grab all you want, I'll still kick your ass. You gotta pick up the pace. Come on, eh? Let's race!
Turn three,
roll the
smoke. Just listen to me, I'll talk to you right through. Go low, and cut it.
Wreck on turn three, caution's out, so I pull into the pit. Fill the tank and take four tires, put a little wedge in it. Now let's race.
All right, caution's out, pits are open. One more lap, come in.
We're going
to take four tires.
Well, I'm a maniac, and I'm on the attack, and you're a racetrack hack at the back of the pack. You drive like my Uncle Pete. He's blind and ain't got no feet. Just one more lap till I take the checkered. Add another win to my winning record. Another trophy, more respect. And a great big gosh darn check. See, there I am in victory lane. I'm doused with champagne once again. There's you in last place. You got egg all over your face. See, I'm the best. I'm the star. I'm the undisputed king of NASCAR. You're just out of place. Cause you just sort of drive. But I race.
Oh, that was a good one. That was a great one. Great finish.
Hey, this is Austin Dillon, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big thanks to Paul Cleveland and Tony B of Brace Yourself. Brace Yourself is a specialized neck support and safety device designed to minimize jolting of the neck after sudden impact in motorsports and other related activities, where helmets are used as a self-protective measure. Visit Paul and Tony at www.braceyourself.webs.com. At this time, I'd like to bring on my good friend, Mr. Reverend Joe. We'll bring Reverend in right now, and we'll get everything started and do an invocation. And then come in. Reverend, how you doing?
Good evening. How's everybody?
We're doing pretty good, a little bit warm down here in Dega. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Reverend.
Lord, we come before you today, and our hearts are heavy. There are friends, close friends who have lost their lives this week, and we pray for their families here in California. We also ask your blessings, Lord, upon all we do, whether it's on the racing circuit or here on the radio, the things we do for you, Lord, the things that we should be doing for you. We ask your blessings upon the show today. We ask your blessings upon all the racetracks that will be racing this weekend, all the officials that will be officiating, all involved in auto racing in all forms, from the top levels to the bottom levels. We ask your protection on all of them, and we ask to be with our troops all over this world who protect us and keep us safe and with their families as they miss their family members. So please be with all of them, Lord. And also we pray for that young man who lost his life being a journalist to the hands of some pretty ugly people who practice an awful false religion. So we ask you all these things in the mighty name of Jesus Christ, our true Lord and Savior. Amen.
Amen. Joe, thank you again very much for being a reverend, and thank you again for the great job that you do for not just people in motorsports, but just people in everyday life. Thank you again, my friend.
We're glad to be with you. Don't forget, everyone can look us up on OnTrackWithJesus.AOL.com. They can write us there. You can also find us at OnTrackWithJesus.org, and we're glad to hear from all of them at all times. And we'll be heading off to Vegas in a few weeks for the truck race. Look forward to seeing some folks there. So God bless you guys. Have a wonderful evening.
Yes, sir. God bless you too, Reverend. Talk about you later, bud.
Take care.
All right. That was our good friend and Reverend from Riverside, California. He's out there, right there close to Vegas, like you said. And at this time, I want to bring my good friend, cohort, sidekick, CEO of Speedway Digest, Mr. Steve.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Stephen, how's everything up in Virginia this evening, bud?
It's hot. 100 degrees hot.
I know. It's hot here, too. And y'all got the humidity just like we got, too, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were pushing over 100 degrees today just with the humidity.
Oh, gosh, I know. Well, if you want to, I'll go ahead and get started. I just sent your text. Sorry I didn't answer you back, and I really didn't take time to download some of that, so we might can just go from scratch. But I'll start with ARCA Series, and I know me and you had talked about we were going to we'll do that after. Let me let the fans know. How we got Mr. Gray London coming on. A lot of people probably don't know Mr. Gray London. He's coming on at 7:20 Eastern time. He was real good friends with Ralph Earnhardt, Dale Earnhardt Sr., and was probably one of the first guys to really help get DEI started. We got him coming on, and he's republishing that book, Timber on the Moon, the Curtis Turner story. And he's going to come on at 7:20 Eastern, and they have agreed, him and Mr. Ed Heinz, they're going to give away a signed book by Gray London, and it is numbered. And we're going to do that whenever Gray comes on. And he's got the, I think I sent you the trivia question, Stephen. And then Grant Enfinger, winner of the Southern Illinois 100 presented by Federated Auto Care yesterday at, I'm going to mess this word up, DuQuoin, Illinois at the State Fairgrounds. We got him coming on at 8:15 Eastern. He had to make a change. He got double set up for another show. But Stephen, I go ahead and get started since we got Gray coming on here in about 10 minutes. And but, yeah, the ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards, by Anzell. Mason Mitchell was your pole sitter at 35.314, 101.943 miles an hour. Margin of victory for Mr. Grant Enfinger was 0.970 seconds. Cautions was 4 for 30 laps. Time of the race was 1 hour, 19 minutes, 8 seconds. Average speed was 75.819 miles an hour. And I'd like to throw my good friend, Will Kimmel, out there. He won practice, and then he had something break on the car, but I was hoping to get him on. And I'll jump over to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. I know I sort of went backwards because the Truck Series was first and the ARCA Series was yesterday. NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, race number 14. Second annual Chevrolet Silverado 250, Sunday, August 31st, 2014, from Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. 0.5-mile road course, total race length, 64 laps, 160 miles. Ryan Blaney won the Chevrolet Silverado 250 at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park, his third NASCAR Camping World Truck Series victory. Prior to the start of the race, the following cars dropped to the rear of the field for reasons indicated. Number 6, number 13, number 21, number 35, unapproved adjustments. Failed to qualify was nobody. Everybody qualified for the race. There was 28 trucks there. Time of the race was 1 hour, 42 minutes, 4 seconds. Your average speed, 92.514 miles an hour. Margin of victory was 0.049 seconds. Caution flags was 2 for 6 laps. Lead changes was 8 among 7 drivers. And with that being said, Stephen, if you want to jump on a little bit of what you got as far as the Nationwide Series and Cup Series, maybe we can work together. I know you've been busy, and I have too, so you got the floor, bud.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to pull all the information tonight, so I'm going to ad-lib a little bit of this tonight just off of memory. It's Saturday night. We were at Atlanta Motor Speedway with the Great Clips 300. Kevin Harvick was your winner out there again this weekend at Atlanta. This was his third or fourth victory this year in the Nationwide Series. Chase Elliott, again, left out of there with the points championships over Ricky Stiff. Jumping over to the Nationwide Series, NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, Saturday night at Atlanta Motor Speedway. We ran out there. Casey King was your winner out there for his first win of the season out there. This will effectively lock him into the chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, leaving this weekend out of Richmond International Raceway. Jeff Gordon still retains the points lead there in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. While we're talking about that for real quick, I think we had talked about this earlier this week where one of the things that I think we can kind of get into a conversation about, and we can talk about this a little bit after Great London, is how and who has been locked into the NASCAR Chase grid coming into Richmond this weekend. We have a lot of drivers out there, especially like Casey King, that are running 22nd, 23rd, who are locked into the Sprint Cup grid, where we have somebody like Ryan Newman that's running ninth in the point series. And he has not locked himself in. All he needs to do this weekend is, Brandon, he needs to start there at Richmond as long as nothing breaks, nothing happens. As long as there's a repeat winner, he pretty much controls his destiny going into this weekend. But it just kind of, you know, it just seems a little off where a ninth place person that, you know, has been running decently all year long and doesn't necessarily have a win is not locked in, whereas you've got Eric Almirola and Casey Kane both on the 22nd, 23rd in the point series standings, and they've already locked themselves in up until this point in the season. So we can have a little bit of a conversation about that after Mr. London gets off the show here. And one of the breaking things coming out of NASCAR today, I'm just going to hit on this real quick. Turner Scott Motorsports has effectively shut down the number 30 truck team of Ron Hornaday effective immediately. There's 18 personnel that are within shop that have been laid off.
Yeah. And, Stephen, I think I got a few minutes. You know, me and you had touched. You know, we can get into a deep conversation about this. I've done a little bit of studying last night after me and you had talked, and I got this statement from Mike Ford from NASCAR. You know, this was Daytona Beach, Florida, September 1st, 2014. This is a chase for a NASCAR Sprint Cup clinch scenarios for Richmond. This is out of NASCAR. And I think I got time to read this, and if y'all want to listen to this. With his win at Atlanta Motor Speedway on Sunday night, just like you talked about, Casey Kane became the 13th winner of the 2014 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series season and the 13th member of the 2014 chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup. Matt Kenseth finished second, which he still has no wins. He finished second at Atlanta, but he has clinched a spot. He's in third. He has clinched because of his points. Matt Kenseth finished second at Atlanta, and though winless, well, I should have read a little bit further, has accumulated enough points throughout the regular season to guarantee himself a spot in the chase. 14 chase spots are now taken, assuming those 14 drivers all attempt to qualify at Richmond. There's something else we can talk about the Tony Stewart thing and the rule and all that. There's just everything we can talk about. Two bursts remain. Here are the chase clinch scenarios for Saturday night's race at Richmond International Raceway, which you will be there. The regular season finale, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC. MRN has your radio coverage, and SiriusXM NASCAR radio has your coverage. If there is a repeat winner, three winless drivers would make the chase, one of which would be Kenseth. If there is a new winner, two winless drivers would make the chase, one would be Kenseth, if Kenseth is not the winner. This is going to get confusing, I know, Stephen. Any current winless driver who wins at Richmond and is in the top 30 NASCAR Sprint Cup driver point stand is clinched this spot in the chase. We talked about that earlier. Something else we can talk about. Only Ryan Newman controls his own destiny. No matter who wins at Richmond, if there is a repeat 2014 winner or a Kenseth victory, Newman is guaranteed a spot in the chase if he finishes 41st or better, or 42nd with at least one lap led, or 43rd and the most laps led. If there is a new winner that is not Kenseth, Newman is guaranteed a chase spot with a finish of 18th or better and at least one lap led, or 20th and the most laps led. Greg Biffle controls his own destiny. If there is a repeat winner, if there is a repeat 2014 winner, or if Kenseth or Newman win, Biffle is guaranteed a spot in the chase if he finishes 22nd or better, or 23rd with at least one lap led, or 24th and the most laps led. If there's a new winner that is not Kenseth or Newman, Biffle needs to outpoint Newman by 19 points and stay ahead of Clint Bowyer and Kyle Larson. Clint Bowyer and Kyle Larson are the only other two drivers who can clinch a spot in the chase without a victory. Now, you want to talk about blowing your mind. Mr. Mike Ford at NASCAR just blew mine. What do you think, bud? I know you couldn't comprehend all that. I have to read it 14 times to comprehend it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of mathematical scenarios in which anybody out there has to clinch a spot this weekend at Richmond International Raceway. You know, it's like, you know, I was talking kind of a little bit before on this, where Ryan Newman, he's ninth, and he is not locked in yet. You know, I feel as if, you know, NASCAR did a good job with this whole wild card new chase scenario that they're going to bring on this year. They've got 16 different drivers that are going to be eligible to go for the NASCAR Sprint Cup Championship with some knockouts throughout the way, knocking it all the way down to the top four going into Miami Homestead Speedway, where any of those four people could potentially win. However, saying that, you know, NASCAR, they did do a good job. They did the best they could. This is the first year of it, so I'm sure, you know, they took a look at a lot of different scenarios, and this was the best one that they could come up with to make it more challenging and make it a little bit better for the fans. However, there needs to be some changes, I feel, that needs to be made into this. If you are running in the top 30, and that's all you do all year long, and you get one win, and you've got 26 races in order to do that. They did not put enough emphasis on winning. And I mean that by that if you are 28th or 29th, and take a look at Kurt Busch, Eric Almirola, Casey Kane, they're prime examples where they have not had the best season at all, but each of them have a win. And each of them are already guaranteed a spot into the NASCAR Sprint Cup, chase for the Sprint Cup. NASCAR needs to take a look, and in my feeling, and maybe reduce that down to the top 20, maybe top 25. Find an even balance in there where they can put more emphasis on winning, put more emphasis on running 100% like they have been told, and put that emphasis on doing the best you can every single weekend. Not to say that, you know, a lot of these guys that are running back there, 22nd, 23rd, 28th, things like that, that they don't deserve a shot. But if they, my feeling is that if you are running that far back, there needs to be something else included. Maybe two wins. Maybe say that if you're in the top 15, we'll lock you in with one. But if you are running 15th to 30th, you need to have two wins in order to ensure yourself a spot in the championship standings. You've got a lot of drivers out there this year that, you know, normally do not run well, normally that would not have multiple wins. Take Dale Earnhardt Jr., for example. He's got three wins right now. Brad Keselowski, he has three wins. Joey Logano, he has three wins. Those guys are showing their championship caliber form. They, by all means, are showing what the NASCAR championship should look like. However, you know, if you're running 28, 29, 30, things like that, and you just happen to win a race, that's not showing NASCAR championship caliber. I feel that we need the best field possible out there going into Miami and going into the chase. So, you know, saying that, you know, there's some changes that could obviously be made throughout this. NASCAR did an excellent job, I feel, this year. And they will hopefully look at it next year and maybe make some tweaks to it and see where they can go with this.
Yeah, I would definitely agree, Stephen. And, you know, we talked about we can get into a long, deep conversation about this, and I'm pretty sure we will. But now we've got Gray London, legendary car owner, big friends with Ralph Earnhardt, probably one of the big supporters of Ralph Earnhardt and Dale Earnhardt Sr. We'd like to bring Mr. Gray Galdon on at this time.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Mr. London, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be in the pit stop with Timmy Spann and Stephen Wilson. How you doing tonight, bud?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. And Mr. Ed Hines said you have a bunch of stories to talk about, and I'm sure you do. And yeah, Mr. London, you can stay on as long as you want to. My good friend Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, I want to hand you over to him while I check on a few things, if that's all right, Mr. London.
That'd be fine.
All right.
That was
nice talk to you.
Hey, this is Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. First question I have for you tonight is, can you kind of tell us a little bit about how you got interested into motorsports and kind of formed that relationship with Ralph Earnhardt to begin what would become DEI Incorporated?
Well, you know, the DEI Incorporated was kind of an offshoot, you know, from the Earnhardt racing team that we started back in 74. And we formed a corporation, you know, Dale and his family and myself. So I was president. Dale was the vice president, and Randy was the secretary treasurer. You know, so at that time, you know, I had worked with Ralph previously, you know, but this happened after Ralph's death, you know, in 73. So, but anyway, after that, well, we got, the family and I got together and we formed a corporation and bought a car from Harry Gant, you know, a 65 Chevelle, and it was an orange Chevelle that Harry ran in 73. So we bought it, and, you know, it became beige then with a number 8 on the side. And Adele and had, you know, they complete the, you know, went through the car and all that before we started racing. But I remember one day in the deal, I got Harry to agree to come to Hickory Speedway, you know, and help Dale whenever he first got on asphalt. So Harry bought his new car out there, and he and Dale got out there running, you know, and it was kind of comical to watch Dale's first few laps because, you know, he was still feathering it like he was on dirt, you know. So he, but Harry came in about 15 or 20 minutes and said, well, he always called me Sandwich Man because of my company, you know, Daddy Made Foods. Excuse me. But anyway, he said, Sandwich Man, you don't have a thing to worry about. It's like throwing a duck in water, you know. So, and then about 2 weeks later, we showed up for the season open race there at, you know, at Hickory. That was his first race. So, you know, but anyway, that was, you know, that company we operated all the way through. But the corporation had a contract with Dale, you know, as a driver. And so, you know, the first 5 years, from 74 to 70, you know, 1979 was whenever he ran for, you know, for Rookie of the Year that he won in NASCAR, you know, with Rod Ashland. So, anyway, but a lot of people don't know about those 5 years in between whenever he was dragging that car up and down the road, you know, racing everywhere. And, you know, I would have him going down to Birmingham or to Nashville or, you know, trying to get him spread out to where, you know, and told him we had to see a bigger audience, you know, than just at Concord and Charlotte, you know. So, and not only that, we had to win, you know. So whenever we went, well, I knew he went to win. So, and I'm sure there was probably some other guys there that would come to win too. But Dale got his share of them, you know, after, say, July of 74, July 19th when he won his first one at Charlotte. And I always get tickled thinking about my daughter, Dale's mother, and Junior's mother, Brenda, had taken my daughter Tracy, you know, to the race, and she went with them every week to the races, you know. And so she, but Tracy was wearing a Harry Gant T-shirt, and she's sitting between Dale's mother and his wife, you know. So anyway, but she done that just to rag Dale, you know, with a whatever he done, you know, if he won, well, he had the big head, and if he didn't win, he couldn't drive, you know, so she was kind of hard on him, you know, so, but anyway, I didn't mean to get off on that other than to say that, you know, that was really the beginning of him starting winning some races, and so, you know, he ran hard, and he had to work hard because, you know, he built engines and him and Randy and Danny and a few people that would come by the shop and all that with some free labor, you know, that's how we kept the cars running, you know. So, but anyway, but he done well once we, you know, got it going. But I've read where he said that was rough years, and they were, I think, you know, in a way, they were really good years. You know, I think, you know, can anybody say, did nobody give it to him? And he worked for it. He was not lazy. He really, really worked for it. And so,
that kind of brings me into my second question that I have for you. So if you take a look back at the 60s and 70s, when Ralph and Dale and these guys were really coming up through the ranks, and these guys had to drag their own equipment around, work on their own equipment week in and week out, and it was tough for them. What do you feel is, you know, kind of seeing that now and seeing the accomplishments that he made, what do you feel is the most lasting accomplishment that Ralph and Dale both left in the sport of NASCAR?
Well, I tell you, Ralph Earnhardt was one of the better drivers that, you know, that I ever seen get in a race car. And I think that he was one of the first that proved that he could make a living racing, you know. So he's one of them that that everything was it was deadly serious when it came race time, you know. He couldn't make it in the Sprint Cup or Grand National, they called it then, because, you know, he wanted to do his own cars, you know. He didn't want to drive a car somebody else built. And so, you know, like when he drove in 61 for Cotton Owens, it was, I've heard him say a lot of times that was the most miserable year of his life, you know, that, you know, he was just driving. He didn't have nothing to say about how the car was set up. And, you know, and if you notice, there wasn't any wins because, you know, it was, you know, the car wasn't to what Ralph thought it should be. But I think that Ralph really left, he left a lot of guys that was wanting to do what he done. You know, that they wanted to be able to drive like he did. And there was some guys like Haywood Plyler and, Ronnie Hopkins and a whole lot of those, and, you know, Bobby Isaacs and all those that used to come by there. And they would be, you know, I think they really looked up to Ralph. You know, he wasn't that much older than me or any of the rest of them, but he just seemed like it. He was, you know, we called him the old man because, you know, it was just like he had so much experience and knowledge about what was going on, you know. And I have been, you know, really proud of what Dale done in NASCAR, you know, and in a lot of ways, I think he really blazed a trail there that. You know, I think that he changed NASCAR a whole lot, and he put them in the stands, you know. So, and I think a lot of the drivers learned a lot from him on the drafting and a lot of things like that. But he was kind of out front on that, but I think they also showed that. You know, they could be good human beings as well, you know. But I think the entire Earnhardt family, you know, contributed a whole lot to racing. So they were good, honest people. So I always had a lot of respect for them. They were always fair to me, you know, and good friends.
And my final question that I had for you tonight is that, you know, looking towards the future, and Dale Jr. is in the car now. He brings a lot to the sport, especially the fan base out there. And now there's others that are within the Earnhardt family that are coming up these days. Where do you feel that the sport is heading going into the future?
Well, you know, I think that it has really surprised me. It has grown so much already, but I think it has a long, long way to go. I think it's someday in the future that they're going to probably have, like the American League and the National League, you know. I really think that they'll have, you know, like two of them, and then they'll have the All-Star Games and the World Series and all that, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. I've just thought about that a lot of times, that they probably would do that and could probably get more days, you know, on the tracks, you know, have more races. Or, and but anyway, and but I think it, they've come a long way on the safety thing, and that's good. So, you know, when I think a lot of times about, you know, people like Farmall and Roberts and a lot of them that very possibly could have still been here, you know, if it hadn't have been for, you know, if we'd had the same safety precautions and all that. So I think that they've been on the right track with that. And this new thing with, you know, with the making, you know, the chase, well, that's been kind of interesting this year. There's probably some changes they can make on it, but it always is, I guess. You know, it takes a few years to get something really worked out, but I think it's going to be real interesting. So, you know, and I certainly want really proud Junior of what he's done this year. And, you know, he's been running hard, you know, so it would sure be wonderful to get to see him win a championship, you know. So, but I think NASCAR's got a good future if they can just get these younger people, you know, more interested and keep them coming, you know. But it takes, you know, they got to have some Dales or Curtis Turners or somebody to put them in the stands, you know. So, but anyway, and but you know, I guess you know, and I said Curtis, I do have a book coming that's out now. You know, the you know, Timber on the Moon with Curtis Turner. Now he put them in stands, you know, like Dale. So, and they were kind of the draw of their time, you know, both of them. So, but anyway, you know, maybe some of them will have time to read my book, you know, or read the book. It's basically the story that Doc Morris, that was Curtis Turner's best friend, that he wrote back in 1966. And we just kind of read that and put add some pictures and a few things, so. But anyway, and I didn't mean to take you away from your question.
I know, that's fine. That was just my final question of the night, and I'm going to throw this back over to Tim. I'm sure he's got a couple questions for you about the book and what you got going on.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
hey,
I appreciate
Lynn,
you coming on the show.
Hello.
Hey, Mr. Lynn, this is Tim Despain. I want to thank you for, I talked to Ed today, and yourself and New Generation Motorsports, Mark and LLC, have agreed to donate one of your signed books and numbered. And I have, I don't know if you have the trivia question, but I have it. Do you want to read it? And we can go ahead and get that question out there and get some fans calling in, and then we can talk about some more stuff. Or do you want me to read the
All right.
question?
You can read it if you would like, if you don't mind.
Okay. Thank
great.
You very much, Ms. Lynn. All right. The trivia question: to win a very, very rare signed and numbered book by Mr. Gray London, Timber on the Moon, The Story of Curtis Turner. Here it is. At what age did Dale Earnhardt Sr., become Gray's official crew chief? That's a good one there, Mr. London.
That was a good one. At what age? Yeah. At what age
yes,
he became? Okay, yeah.
Yes, sir. And I have a couple of questions, and I don't really want to cross the line, but I was told to ask you, if I can find it here, something about you and some people and some chicken wings or something.
And some
at a motel in Danville, Virginia.
Well, that's where I had met Curtis at the track before, Curtis Turner at the track before, but I haven't, It was the first time I ever really spent time, you know, a good bit of time with him. And whenever he was putting on the race at Danville, a road course, and this was right after he was, you know, thrown out of NASCAR. And whenever we got to the room, Curtis and Mr. Bruton Smith and Tim Flock and a newspaper man was in the room. So Curtis was sitting up on this big white bedspread, and he had a bucket of chicken between his legs, and he had some mud on his boots. It had rained out there at the track that afternoon, and he had that mud all over that white sheet, and he was eating that chicken and slinging the bones up against the wall. I mean, he was a wild man that day. Tim and Joe Blanton that was with me, Joe asked Curtis to tell me that story about the dogs forming a union, you know. So I don't know whether I should tell that here or not, you know. But anyway, it was quite a story, you know, and I never forgot it, you know. But the dogs had all met at this great big meeting hall, and so as they went into the room, you know, they were hanging their tails up on there to hat rack, you know, on that hook. And so anyway, about the time they all got settled down there, you know, some fool in there hollered out fire, and all the dogs went running out, and each one of them just grabbing one, you know. And they said that that was the reason to this very day that a dog would leave a juicy bone, because he'd go smell another dog because he thinks it may be his own. So, anyway. But you ought to hear Curtis could tell it better than me, you know. So, I mean, I laughed at him. He was something else. It was quite a week up there. Curtis had leased that the Bird Ann Motel right there at the North Carolina Virginia line, and you know, the restaurant and all, you know. So, that Saturday night before the race, they had a twist contest, and the girl that won the twist contest was to get a mink stole. And so whenever they come up with the winner, well, they couldn't find the stole, the mink stole. Curtis would give it to somebody, you know. So anyway, so Doc Morris, the guy that wrote the book there, he had to find another grand prize in a hurry, you know. So, but... And then the next morning, you know, I think whenever we got to the track, well, couldn't nobody find Curtis, you know. And so someone up there in Danville around that area there, Curtis had sold them a Lincoln and went ahead and gave him the title, even though they hadn't fully paid him for it. So anyway, while he was up that way and they hadn't paid him for it, he just went and got the car. You know, so he got arrested, and he had had a few beers, I think, you know, and so even enough next morning, you could tell he had a few, you know. So anyway, it was time for the race to start, and the mayor was up there in the receiving line, you know, and so they finally called in, and the sheriff said, yeah, they had him in jail, you know. So they got him out, and he come to the track and got out and staggered down through there and got Tim, put him in the car. And long story short, Curtis won the race anyway, you know. So anyway, it didn't hurt his driving, you know. But it was quite a weekend, you know, a week. So, but
yes, sir.
Anyway,
and you know, Mr. London. Yes, sir. I could listen to. I mean, I love listening to the old old time NASCAR. I can listen to stories that you tell. I don't know. Just I can sit all night and listen. But I have a little small story of myself here at Talladega. I used to work for Mr. Enos Daly back in the '80s. Whenever I was in high school, you know, back then, you know, they had the Union 76 balls here at Talladega Super Speedway, and during practice during the week, you know, we used to get to check out of school, and we'd go, you know, set up in the balls, and you know, spot, you know, as far as rain or debris, and you know, we would call back to the tower, you know, and talk to Bucky. I know you remember Bucky. Bucky was a sight. And you know, we always used to meet at Enoch's office every morning, and we had the old phone headsets, you know, that they just plugged into a jack, and we were plugged into the tower, and me and three more of my friends, I always sat over in turn two. I like turn two because I was over by myself, and it was hot as a dickens up in them balls. But you know, Enoch and Mr. Pete Sutcliffe was a good friend of mine from Daytona, and we always turned our headsets in. And well, we was over there one morning, and Rusty Wallace come in, and Enoch was handing out rental car keys. And you know how big of a man Enoch was. He had that old big high back chair. Mr. London. And well, anyway, Rusty walked out and seen it was a green rental car. And you know how drivers are about green cars.
About green, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Well, we was all sitting there. We was just 13, 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
And Rusty come in there, and he didn't lay the keys. I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to tell the truth because nothing was wrong.
Yeah.
He threw the keys on Enoch's desk. He said, Mr. Staley, I'm not driving no blankety-blank green rental car.
Yeah.
Well, you know how Enoch was. He's sitting there in that old big high-back chair. He just—we was all teenagers sitting over on the couch. He just sort of slid back, and he stood up, and he grabbed them keys, Mr. London, and he hit Rusty right in the chest with them. He said, "You'll drive whatever blankety blank car I tell you to drive." And you know what? Rusty went out there and got in that green rental car. But anyway, Mr. London, I just wanted to throw that in there. I mean, I love hearing these old stories. But we have a caller. I'm going to see if he wants to answer the trivia question. I'll see if I can get it back on my phone to make sure I don't mess it up. My good friend Todd Bigsby from upstate New York, his home track is Watkins Glen. We want to bring Todd on with you. Todd, how you doing tonight, my friend? You're in the pit stop, Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson, and Mr. Gray London.
I'm doing good.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Just fine. It's good to hear from you.
It's good to hear your stories and know a little more on the whole history, so I'm enjoying listening to this.
Well, that's great.
My lucky guess would be 56.
Oh, gosh. Where's my button?
What I was he talking about? What year? You
want me to ask it to him again, Mr. London? Todd, we're going to give you one more chance, just in case you didn't hear it. At what age did Dale Earnhardt Sr. now, think a minute, become Gray's official crew chief?
I would say 18.
Golly. Todd. Okay, Todd, we're gonna put you back on. We're gonna put you back over mute, Todd. We got another caller, Mr. London. We've got Miss Donna DeBoer. I don't know if you know Miss Donna. Hey, Miss Donna, you're in a pit stop.
Hi.
Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson,
on?
And Mr. Yes, ma'am, you're on with Mr. Gray London.
Hello.
How are you?
Just fine. I hope you
I'm
are.
I'm so excited to hear all your stories tonight.
Well,
but
good.
My guess is 13.
13?
13.
We have a winner, Mr. London. She is going to have one of the most rare. She's going to have one of the most rare books in the world, ain't she?
That's right.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm
well.
I'm such a NASCAR fanatic.
Yeah. Well, he was 13. That's correct.
I know. I said, "Whoa, that is just crazy." I'm excited to read the book. I can't read. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, Mr. London, didn't you? You sort of redone some stuff in the book, am I correct, about the actual true story and, you know, why Curtis Turner is not in the NASCAR Hall of Fame? Am I correct, Mr.
Yeah. Yeah, I question that, you know, why he's not, you know. So, in other words, to me, you know, honestly and truthfully, I think that he should have been in the first class that went in, you know.
Yes,
I mean, I really believe that.
No, I agree.
So, you know, but there had to be something going on because, you know, I mean, I know he was, you know, barred one time and that type of thing. But if it's on ability, Humpy Wheeler, you know, I remember him saying that the two best that he ever saw was Curtis Turner and Dale Earnhardt, you know. And so he said, "I'll put it to you this way: they could lose a car of the father's and bring it back." And I happen to agree with him. And I got to see a whole lot of racers over a 50-year period, too. You know, and you know, it was kind of, you could tell by the fans' reaction, because you know, if those two, you know, Curtis in his day and Dale in his day. They put them in the stands. I mean, people want to see it. They want to see a race, and they'd always give them a race, you know. So, you know, and
yes, sir.
There's no doubt.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I don't mean to run over my time, but
no,
you know,
Mr. London, you have all the time you want, and Miss Donna, since you won the prize, is there anything you'd like to ask Mr. London about, you know, back in the day or what he's got going on now?
No, I'm just enjoying all of his stories and filling us in on all the old NASCAR, because I've been doing it since I was a little girl, and I'm 65 now, so I've been in the NASCAR a long time too. So
yeah.
I'd love to hear about the old days.
Well, you know, I have one short one for you, honey, and both of them involved. I had two, but both of them involved the 67 Chevelle, and maybe the one was back in 67, you know. In other words, I had a new black and gold 396, and Ralph Earnhardt had invited me and Dale Inman, who is Dale Senior's mother's brother, mm-hmm. you know, Dale's uncle.
Right.
And so to go with him to the NASCAR banquet that year, and it was held down at the Holiday Inn in Greenville, South Carolina. So they have come a long way, haven't they? And,
just a little.
But anyway,
I do have a story about Dale when you're done. Go ahead.
So Dale had got after me, you know. He was helping me on on my car. So he got after me, you know, wanting me to get his dad to let him go. Well, I asked Ralph, and Ralph said, "No, he's not going." And so then about two or three days later, I'd back Ralph. You know, come on, he's really helped me a lot on the car, and he's been working hard, and he wants to go so bad. And so Ralph said, "No, I told you he wasn't going. If he goes, Randy will have to go. And Randy goes, Danny will have to go. And I ain't taking the whole family down there, you know." So anyway, and he kept on that and kept on at it. And so the days was getting closer, the time we go. And so Dale just kept after me, and I mean, he was getting all upset about it. And, you know, Dale was like 16, you know, at this time. So anyway, but we left home without him, you know. Anyway, we got down there, we brought a Chevelle full of trophies back. And then, but anyway, you know, several numbers of years later, I was out in Tennessee on business, and I was driving along whenever I heard that, you know, Dale had sensed the seventh championship, and I started laughing. I couldn't stop laughing because I was just thinking about the times that we wouldn't even let him go with us.
Let him go anywhere.
And now he was a star of the show seven times, you know. So, but anyway, it was just and then the other end of that, Chevelle, was one day near to the garage. Ralph and I had gone off in his pickup, and you know, and which we didn't do that often, but anyway, we'd gone in the pickup, mm-hmm. and whenever we'd come back home, and it was pulling in there at the garage, and I looked, my car wasn't there, and I said, oh, I left the keys in it, you know, and so. Anyway, as soon as we got pulled down in the driveway there, and I got out, and Randy came out the back door, Dale's brother, and I hollered, Randy, where's my car at? And he said he looked up across the garage up over the trees there, and there was dust coming all across those trees up there, you know. Just, and then I heard that Chevrolet moaning, you know. And it was down the next road down, and I went running down through the woods there behind the garage and got down there, and I heard gravel flying and everything else, you know, and Dale had that thing locked down in the road there, and he was spinning it around and around and around, you know, and that thing, the tires were, you know, the smoke was, the tires were burning, and you could smell that smoke, you know, and he had her just wide open, just spinning it around and around.
See that?
And whenever he stopped, you know, it took I don't know how long for the dust to settle down, but Ralph had come walking up behind me and punched me there on my shoulder, and he said, I'm going to the house, so that's between you and him, you know. So anyway, but he is down there spinning that thing around, and those tires were just slick. I mean, in fact, they was just wore through to the, you know, the belting in them. And, you know, and I told him, I said, you know, one thing you're going to do is you're going to wash it, you know, and vacuum it and everything else, you know. And then we're going to take it out of your pay for the, you know, the tires. We're going to put two new tires on the back. Because the car was new. I hadn't had it 2 weeks. And he was down there swinging it around and around, you know. So anyway, but he had a streak in him, you know, when he was that age, you know.
Yeah,
so,
these stories are just awesome, though.
But it was, you know, it was so many, and he, you know, I used to go get him whenever he played those slot cars, you know, down at Midway, Canapolis, and he'd call me, you know, and say to him, put him through, you know, and he'd say, can you come get me? And, you know, he'd done that 100 times, you know, and I wouldn't have to ask him where, I knew where he was at. So I'd go down to Midway at that slot car place, you know, he'd lay out of school and be down there playing slot cars all day, you know. So he'd have a notebook, and I'd carry him home and let him out down there about a block, you know, from the house. And so he'd go walking in the house, I guess, with his notebook, you know. I'd go on out that road and go back to the plants, you know. But I don't know how many times I went down there and got him, you know. It's a wonder that he, of course, I think they were calling from school and things like that. But Ralph never went looking for him, you know. He just, you know, to him, he was either going to go or he wasn't going to go, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he talked to him and all, wanting him to finish high school, but that's all he said, you know. But later, Dale said he wished he felt like he disappointed his dad, you know, but not finishing.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish that was a driver we wish I had met, but we do have a treasure. In 1996, my son had his Make-A-Wish at Richmond, and we were in the garage looking, because we were guests that weekend with the Yates Racing at that time.
Uh-huh.
And they sponsored my son for his Make-A-Wish, and we were in the garage, and Richard Childress was standing there, and, of course, he says, hey, boy, come over here. You want to see a real car, which was
Dale Sr.'s car.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, my son, he's, you know, 16 years old. He just kind of shyly walked over there. And so they got to talking, and Dale had just pulled in the garage, but he had just left, and we didn't get to speak to him. And he reached in the car and took off Dale's black goggles and handed them to my son. So now every time that we are lucky enough to get in the garage, at Richard, we'll see Richard, and he'll go, "Boy, you still got those goggles?" And we'll go, "Yes, sir."
Isn't that something?
Treasure that we'll never, you know,
I'm sure. Yeah, well, that's great, honey. I'm so glad.
And we thank God every day. He'll be 30. He just turned 35. And,
is that right?
So he was 16 on his Make-A-Wish, so.
Uh-huh. Well, I wish him the very best, honey, and you too.
And you too, sir, and thank you so much for the book. I really enjoyed it. Finish the show.
Is he
going to
give me your address?
Yeah, Suzanne will get it.
Mr. London, this is Tim. Yeah, I'm going to put Donna back over in the screening room with Suzanne, and she'll get the address, and Suzanne said she will send the address to Mr. Edward Hines, if that's okay with you.
That'd be fine.
All right.
Okay.
God bless you, hon, and thanks, and I'll be listening to the rest of the show.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well,
you take care. Okay.
Thank
bye-bye.
You, sir.
All right. Thanks, Donna. I'll put you back over there, Suzanne. Okay. Yes, sir. You're still here, Mr. London. I don't care. I could listen to you all night, but if you want to talk about the book and get some stuff out there, my friend, you've got the floor.
Well, I would just love for the people. I think that it's a lot of NASCAR history in it. I think that they would, I'm sure that the older people, you know, that's been around racing a long time know, you know, I don't have to tell them anything about Curtis, but a lot of the younger people, it's really a big piece of NASCAR history. And it really tells the history of the building of the Charlotte Motor Speedway. And, and Curtis was a character like, you know, being a character, well, there's not many people in the business that could ever come up to his where he was at, you know. I mean, he's a man that landed a plane. He landed a plane down here at Easley, South Carolina on Sunday morning when people was in church. He landed it out there on the road, you know. And because the guy that was with him had some whiskey there in his office. And so they knew that it was on Sunday, so they knew the liquor store would be closed. So they had to get that, you know, so they stopped in there. And then whenever they took off, I think they run a red light and clipped a few lines too, you know. And so the FAA was there in Charlotte, and they got his license whenever he landed over there, you know. So, but Curtis was something else. There was no doubt about it. But he could do things with a car that. You hear them today, you know, talking about, you know, loose and it's tight and those type of things. And I remember the Wood Brothers one time talking about that they had brought a car down to Charlotte and that Curtis was going to run. They had like four or five things that they knew they was going to do to the car. But when they got there, and Curtis took it on out on the track and run it a little bit, and so he got it on up speed, and he brought it back in, you know, when he got out of it, he told me, he says, "Perfect, don't touch it." So anyway, he was one of them that made the car do what he wanted to, you know what I mean? If it
yes,
was tight, he'd loosen it up. If it was loose, he'd tighten it up, you know. But but he would do it by where he would run on the track, or you know, he had ways of doing it, you know. So
yes, sir.
Curtis was something else. He was absolutely amazing with the race car. There was no doubt about that. So
yes, sir.
So,
and Mr. London, I want to thank you very much for taking time out to come on the show, and thank you very much for what you've done for the sport that myself and Stephen Wilson and all these listeners love NASCAR.
Well, I'm glad, and I hope that they'll keep enjoying it for a long, long time, and call me anytime, you know. So, and I thank you for letting me mention my book, and maybe someone will be interested enough to get one, you know. But they're on Amazon, you know, at Timber on the Moon, you know, the Curtis Turner story. So.
Yes, sir. And Mr. London, you're very welcome, sir. And don't be a stranger. Myself and Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, we'd love to get you back on later. And we might even add a whole new show one night and not do Tuesday night and just have a Just have a whole 2 hour talk about back in the day. What do you think, Stephen?
Yeah, man, that sounds good to me. He's got a lot of cool stories I'm sure we can listen to.
I know. I can listen to
Ralph Earnhardt, you know. Yeah. Heard a bunch with Ralph and Dale, you know, and Curtis, you know, so and Tim Flock and Joe Weddeley, you know. So, but I thank you guys so much, and y'all been very kind. So,
yes, sir.
And
thank you very much.
Thank you, and
good
night.
And Mr. London, we will definitely.
Yes, sir.
I will get with Stephen, and we will definitely get a one night. You know, we got some airtime to spare, and we'll let Stephen make it a special edition one night. Maybe either a Monday night or a Friday night or something, and we'll bring you on and just talk old school racing if that's okay with you.
That'd be wonderful, you know. Yeah, I've got a trailer hitch story, I'll tell you, you know. So, and Ralph decided that was a lot better than a seat belt, you know. So, you know, but there's a whole lot of them, you know, with Ralph and Dale, you know. And And I've enjoyed it so much, and thank you guys.
Yes, sir, we have too. Thank you very much, Mr. London.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Stephen, I could have talked to Mr. London all night. I mean, gosh, he has some stories that, you know, that I've never heard, and I'm sure there's a lot of our listeners that are first hearing him and are saying, golly, I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to look at the history of the sport where Curtis Turner, Joe Weatherly, a lot of those guys that really came off, the Flock brothers, you know, there's a lot of stories out there that got NASCAR to where it is these days. And without a lot of them, we wouldn't have NASCAR. NASCAR went through some periods during those times where they didn't know whether they were going to run the next race or not. But it was the kind of guys like that that kept the sport going week in and week out to make sure that they made the show the next week. They had the car count, and definitely, to be a NASCAR fan, you really got to know the history of the sport and see where it came from and see where it is today, and it'll give you a whole new appreciation of how the sport has come along after all these years.
Yeah, you're right, Steve. And there's a lot of fans that, like the younger generation, what I call the social media generation coming up, they've not, you know, I know they got Google where they can search it, but they don't really care. They've never seen or heard talk about that side of it back when you were coming up through the sport and excuse my language, but didn't have a damn dime for nothing. And, you know, and I'm sure Mr. Gray London, you know, good friends with Ralph Earnhardt, Dale Earnhardt Sr., they done a real great job together. But Stephen, and I want to apologize to Tony B and Tina Stull for running over, but we had to listen to these stories, and I want to bring Tony B on and Miss Tina Stull, and We've got Grant Enfinger is scheduled for 8:15 Eastern Time, 7:15 my time Central. He had to reschedule because he got double booked by his PR lady, and she apologized to me. But Stephen, is anything, any last words you want, or would you like to stay on and maybe talk to Grant when he comes on here in about 5 minutes?
Yeah, I'll hang out here and wait for Grant to come on. I'll let Tony and Tina and everybody do their segment. And make sure you tell Tony B a happy birthday, because it was his birthday yesterday.
I know it. I sent him a birthday thing on Facebook. He didn't send me nothing back. I said, "What? I'll bring Tony on right now."
Let's get ready to rumble!
Tony
well,
B, sorry for the wait. Sorry for the wait. We went over with Mr. Graylund, and Stephen, wanted to tell you happy birthday.
Well, thank you both, and thank both of your wives. They both, all four of you guys sent me birthday wishes, and it was wonderful. I spent the day at home alone and did a little research on this and that, and live, love, race, and I really appreciate it. I might have done a little work on my fantasy league. I'm just not real sure, but at 52, you can get away with that.
So that means at 52, your Social Security number begins with number one? I'm just joking. I'm just joking. Don't jump through the computer with me. No. But, yeah, Stephen, wanted to wish you happy birthday, bud.
Awesome. Thank you, Stephen.
Anytime, bud. Hey, I hope you had a good one out there. You know, sometimes doing nothing is better than doing something.
Absolutely. I just come off a bit. We sponsored a big race for USAC and spent 4 days getting it in and then spent a day at SFI doing some testing with Brace Yourself. And been really busy, but all good, and things are great. And love being on the radio with you and Tim and Suzanne and Tina. And you guys do a great job. And, boy, your first guest was wonderful.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Tony. And we've got Miss NHRA herself, your sidekick, Miss Tina Stull. We want to bring her on, and then we'll be right on the phone. Hey, Tina, how you doing tonight, sweetie?
I'm doing great. Hey, I heard a rumor that Tony B did something amazing. He broke the most years consecutively alive just yesterday. I want to congratulate him on his new personal best. We'd like to be around winners, and I'm glad you're here with us.
my last name is Baginski, and that is half Italian. Now, the other half, you can throw that joke at. Oh, yeah, come on.
Well, a big happy birthday to you, and so glad to be on tonight.
Absolutely. It's good to have Miss NHRA on here, even though there it was a fabulous Miss NHRA that showed John Force the other way.
Well, I won't take that Miss NHRA title because I'm sure there are a lot of girls in short shorts and tube tops that can claim, you know, claim fame to that prior to me being around. But I do love my sport.
Well, the U.S. Nationals were very entertaining, to say the least, and I did get to watch them. And I will say, John Force just got beat by Alexis, and we had a rookie win in Top Fuel, and that says a lot for the sport.
It was a crazy Indy, which, you know, to be honest, I've been there many years. This year I missed it, but there's not an Indy goes by that you come away thinking this was, you know, typical. It always seems to be a little bit different. This year happened to be really unusual in that we had all new winners, no repeats. Alexis DeJoria did an awesome job of driving. You know, I was, you know, of course I'm active on Twitter and was twitting my brains out during the race. And, you know, a lot of people said, you know, wow, a woman won it. I said, no, a good racer won it. She really, I mean, she earned it. You look round to round. It was very tough racing in Indy, and we'll kind of see that through category. There were some real difficulties with the track. There were some difficulties with the weather. A lot of you know, variables were thrown in there. But I don't think anybody got a free ride to the finals, you know, for sure in any category. And,
well, speaking of that, in the Verizon IndyCar series, maybe he figured out he wasn't playing Yahtzee, but Will Power, finally, after about four tries, won the championship, and I got to hand it to him. Will Power finally stuck it together for the entire season and won the championship, but I also got to hand it out to Chip Ganassi Racing for Tony Kanaan taking the first place and Scott Dixon number two at Fontana. That was quite a race and quite a show that they put on. And so when we're talking Indy, we're talking not only the U.S. Nationals, we're talking about the Indianapolis 500 cars and the Verizon series.
That definitely is huge. That's huge. Was that an upset, or was that kind of predicted? Were people thinking that was how it was going to play out?
Well, Will Power has had problems finishing. And when I was in the series, at Fontana, all he had to do was just stay clean. And he didn't, Tim Cindric didn't see it that way, and they didn't stay that way. And Ryan Hunter-Reay won the championship. So just glad to see him finally get the championship. He's a good Australian boy, and he's worked very hard, and he deserves it for where he's at.
Is that just part of maturing as a driver, being able to take it through the final stretch, being able to, like, make it through that, or is that an attitude adjustment?
Well, I think any time we're talking about the long races that they have and the schedule that they have, it's just like, you know, and I was proven wrong with Kurt Busch in the Indianapolis 500. I just thought that wasn't his main thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he really impressed me, and he done very, very well. But it's something that you have to do and do often and
mm-hmm.
know how to start and how to finish. And
okay.
Hey, Tony. Tony,
yes.
This is Tim. I hate to interrupt, but we've got Mr. Grant Enfinger waiting.
Okay.
He won the Southern Illinois 100 presented by Federated Car Care yesterday. Grant Enfinger is second place in points right now, one of my good friends from Fairhope, Alabama. We want to bring Mr. Grant Enfinger in the pit stop with Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson, Tony Bajinski, and Tina Stone.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Grant, I've added some buttons since the last time he's on the show. How you doing tonight, my friend? Grant, can you hear me?
Hello? Okay, I have you now.
Okay. I've added some buttons since the last time he's on the show. How you doing tonight, my friend?
We're doing great. Doing great. Coming off a big weekend, so just everybody's pumped up and just leaving the shop here.
Okay,
well, Grant,
I know you've got a limited schedule, Grant, but I want to me and you had talked. You're still second in points, correct? With three to go, right? Behind
Mason. We're second in points. We're 20 points behind. So it's been a neck and neck battle all year, and it looks like it's going to be that way all the way into the finale at Kansas. So, you know, Mason Mitchell and his group have really raced us hard all year, and man, we're two teams kind of throwing everything we got at it every week. So it's shaping up to be a really good battle for the ARCA series.
That sounds good, bud. And Grant, I've been following you all year. You know, which I'm real good friends with Will. You know, I can't be biased. Me and Will are good friends, but I know he's not racing the full-time ARCA racing series presented by Menards. But I want to thank you for coming on, and I know everybody has a ton of questions, and don't be a stranger. I want to hand you over to my good friend, Stephen Wilson.
That sounds good.
Hey, Grant, Steve Wilson, SeawayDigest.com. Just a quick question for you. Earlier this season, you've moved over from BCR Racing over to GMS Racing, about halfway through the season. Do you feel that you would be in the same position you are right now, or do you think you would be leading the points if you would have stayed over at BCR Racing?
You know, the reason we were kind of in that position that we were to change teams wasn't performance based so much as it was we just didn't know if we were going to make it to the end of the year. So we didn't have that security. If at the end of the day we were racing week to week, didn't know how we were going to make it any further. The good Lord blessed me with a great opportunity here at GMS Racing, and I don't think there's a real good way to answer that question because like I said, didn't know if we would have made it to this point. I can't say anything about all the guys at BCR that got us through the first half of the season and helped make this happen. But everybody at GMS has welcomed me with open arms, and myself and Pickle, the crew chief, has seemed to gel from day one. And we've done nothing but make progress the whole time. I would have had no idea that we ever would have pulled off a turf victory, but the guys at GMS just have unbelievable cars. So I don't have one little clue about dirt racing, but they allowed me to get in their car and just kind of learn how to drive it. And man, we just had an unbelievable day yesterday.
And that second question, I'm going to throw you back over to Tim or Tony or whoever's got a question for you, is that do you feel with your performance this year that this will be a stepping stone for you to get back into the NASCAR series?
You know, I sure hope so. At the end of the day, as a spectator at home, as a driver, as somebody in the industry, you want everything to be performance-based. At the end of the day, that's just not always the case. So there's a lot of stuff, a lot of other things that have to come into play for that as well. But I feel strongly that running good is going to open some doors. There's definitely some opportunities there with GMS Racing. They already field two trucks. But that would be the natural stepping stone there. That's what everybody's really, really working hard towards right now. To answer your question, I hope so.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Congratulations on your win yesterday, and good luck throughout the rest of the season.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Stephen. And, Grant, this is Tim. One more time, I want to ask one more quick question. I know Tony B. and my good friend Tina Stull. She's Miss NHRA. She's a drag racer, and Tony B. is a Indy 500 champion crew member with Dario Franchini when he won the Indianapolis 500. But I got one quick question, and I'll hand you over to him. And I know you was on the show a couple of times, and I can't remember, Grant, but I want to make sure. Did you have just a one-race deal at Daytona with Motor Honey, and then it turned into something else later, or was it just a couple races deal? Grant, I can't remember.
at the end of the day, everybody wanted to do exactly what we're doing right now and run for the full season. But no, there wasn't any agreement there to everybody was, I wouldn't say a one-race deal by any means, but it just wasn't all the details lined out to run a full season. We all wanted to, just kind of didn't know how it was going to happen. So fortunately, we kept plugging along, and everybody worked their guts out to make this deal happen. And lo and behold, it looks like we're going to make it to the end now. So and it's pretty cool that we still got K-Site Motor Honey on board supporting this deal. Allegiant Travel, which is part of the GMS Racing Stable, Worth USA. We've got a lot of great partners that have made this possible. So it's pretty it's not how I would expect it this year to go, but in all honesty, it just had a lot of really great blessings.
Yes, sir, you did, Grant, and I mean, you really just blew it out. I want to congratulate you on your sixth win, and don't be a stranger, bud. I'm going to hand you over to Tony B and Miss Tina Stowe. They have a few questions, and since I'm in a pit stop, Tennis Bain, I'm going to take me a pit stop. I'll be right back. Thanks again, Grant. Don't be a stranger, bud.
That sounds great.
Well, hey, Grant, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great.
We've talked before. I am with Brace Yourself, and we have talked about getting together and sponsoring and taking advantage of the safety product that we have. But I want to congratulate you on winning at DeCoin, and I'd like to ask you a question. How long were you there, and did you happen to see Shane Cockrum win the Ted Horn 100 in the USAC Silver Crown cars?
No, you know, I usually go to the USAC race the night before. We didn't go there this year. We got in kind of late. We decided to kind of make a weekend of it at Springfield. Me and my girlfriend went up there a little early and went to the fair and stuff like that. And DeCoin, we just kind of blew in there and blew out of there. So didn't have time to do that this time.
Okay. I read some of your statements that you made about you just kind of got into it. And did the track come to you after it started blackening over, or did you have it the whole time?
I don't think the track really came to us. I think Pickle and everybody at GMS Racing had me the car I needed the whole time we were there. It just took a little while for me to figure out what I needed to be doing in the driver's seat. I just don't have very much dirt experience, and I don't really know what I'm looking for. So it took me being behind my crew chief mentor slash friend Kelly Kowski. He was running third, and I was running fourth at the beginning of the race, and I ran behind him for about 10 laps, and feel like I learned some stuff, and then started being a little bit more aggressive in some places, and a little less aggressive in other places, and then lo and behold, now we're fast. Now all of a sudden we're taking the lead, and I just really couldn't believe it. Being at a dirt track, having a car like we did, and having the performance we did, so. Definitely wasn't something we lucked into. We were legit strong and competitive the whole week, or the whole day yesterday.
Absolutely great work. Am I correct? You led 63 laps?
Correct. So
absolutely,
you know,
great deal.
Tony, I got a question
if
I can butt in. You know what, having changed teams throughout my career, and going from different types of cars to different classes where the racing is a little different, I'm amazed at just being able to transfer that what you've done, gone from one type of racing to another and transferring from one team to another and making it so successful. What do you think were the biggest challenges, and what do you think that the new team obviously did that helped you to integrate so quickly?
You know, I think the biggest challenges was the uncertainty. You know, every everybody had the same goal and wanted to make everything happen with my original team. Just it just wasn't all panning out. So, you know, you could kind of stay over there and take your chances and hope something falls in your lap to where you're able to make it to the next race. But it became more and more a reality that just wasn't going to happen. So, man, these guys.
Oh, I didn't mean it from a loyalty standpoint. I meant it from just a transitioning from team to team. It's like when I've raced with teams, you get to know everybody. You know what they're thinking. You know what they mean when they say what they say. When you transition to a new team, you know, everybody's little dialect is a little different. Everybody's, you know, what they think that they're saying and so forth. To do that successfully, obviously you've done that so well, and to do it in such a short period of time.
You know, I think everybody at GMS Racing, they kind of plugged me in. They already had a really good organization,
mm-hmm.
so it was me more learning their system.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like me and Fickle, the crew chief, kind of gelled at the beginning. We unloaded at Indy for our first race at Indianapolis, and honestly, we were pretty bad in practice. I think it took about the whole practice for kind of him to learn when I'm saying it's a four or five tight. I mean, it's real tight. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just stuff like that. So we ended up qualifying 15th there, and then by the end of the race, we're leading last. We ended up finishing fourth, and it seems like from that point on, we just seem to gel. So sometimes it takes you months. Sometimes it takes you hours, I guess. And fortunately, we were able to get on the same page fairly quickly. And hopefully, hopefully we can maintain that through the end of the year. But I think another thing is the way our competitor Mason Mitchell has been, we didn't have any choice. If we were going to struggle for a couple races, we would be out of this championship hunt already. So, we didn't have a choice, I don't think.
Having that common goal, it gets everybody in line real quick, especially when there's no wiggle room. I mean, you got a noose around your throat, man. You cooperate real quick.
Absolutely. Everybody at GMS is 100% focused on this championship chase, and everybody's doing everything they can. So, I do think that helps.
Speaking of the championship chase, Grant, you're getting ready to go to Salem Motor Speedway, and you did pretty well. It was a long, drawn-out fight, but you did well at Winchester. And Salem is just another Winchester. Have you ran there before?
We did. I beat my hero Ken Schrader there in the spring. So we were running second to Kenny, and he ended up having an issue on the white flag lap, and I was able to outrun him there. I love Salem. I love Winchester. Those places, it doesn't matter how many times you go there. I have to come in after about the first five laps of practice because I haven't breathed. It just takes your breath away. That track is so small but so fast. It's just
extremely high bank and extremely fast.
And this year they've thrown yet another variable in there for us. They have paved only turns 3 and 4, which I've never heard of that in my racing life yet, but we're going with a new service since turns 3 and 4, and everything else is the same old Salem. So, you know, that's gonna be something different for our crew chief Pickle to figure out. It's definitely gonna change some aspects of the race, but I'm looking forward to getting there. So
right.
We've had really good success with our short track program this year.
I would think that. That is going to be a major stepping stone. To be honest with you, during my tenure as National Safety Director for the American Speed Association, we ran not only Salem, we ran Winchester as well. And those places are rough and they're tough and they're very seasoned and only pave two corners and have the still same old 1 and 2. I expect it to cause your crew chief a lot of thinking.
he's going to have his work cut out for him. At least all I have to do is drive it when we get there. So it's going to have all the crew chiefs are going to have their thinking caps on, I think, from that. But everybody's kind of in the same boat. So we'll go there and see what happens. But like I said, GMS Racing has a really, really good short track program. We're taking the car that we won with at Berlin and ran really, really strong with at Madison a week ago. So I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Have you ever run the Milwaukee Mile?
I have not. I would love to one day, but I hadn't been given the opportunity yet.
I just wondered. I wanted to associate the mile tracks, pavement, asphalt, and flat, and just see what you thought.
Well, I can tell you one thing: DeCoin and Springfield in the ARCA series, it is a 1 mile flat horse track. There's no other way to explain it. So I don't really think it was designed for stock cars, but I really commend ARCA for having such a long history there. I think this race at DeCoin was the 61st race at DeCoin for the ARCA series, and just it's taken NASCAR a while to get back to the roots, but the ARCA series they've stuck with it the whole time. It's an extremely diverse series, going from the road courses to the super speedways to the short tracks to the mile and a half to the dirt track. So it's pretty special to be part of that.
Yeah, and I'm very thankful that you are. And it brings me back into my younger days when USAC used to run dirt with stock cars. And I firmly believe that with the Camping World Truck Series going to Eldora, they've opened up a door for Nationwide and Sprint Cup maybe to revisit that in part of their schedule. And I would be one of the first to buy a ticket and watch Grand M Finger run.
Well, I appreciate that, and yeah, I think I think that's big, and I think it's like I said, it's been a really probably big eye opener for NASCAR and for everyone how popular that Eldora race is becoming for the Truck Series. So, there's maybe a demographic that we've kind of got away from being the guys that started this deal, and this racing got started on the dirt, and I think all the series need to maintain some presence there. So I know it plays havoc on the crew chiefs and the teams and everything else preparing a car for that, but I really think it's important, and I'm glad the ARCA series is stuck with it for so long.
Congratulations again on such a great win, and either through Tim to Spain, or you and I together, I do still want to reach out to you with Brace Yourself, one of the best safety devices to come to motorsports ever from Paul Cleveland in Australia. And we want to reach out to you, as we have talked before, and go down that road.
That sounds great. That sounds great.
Tina, are you still there? Oh, I think we lost her. One thing I would ask you, Grant, I'm looking at the I tell you what, Mason Mitchell and you guys are nearly tied in top fives and top tens, and you've got him really whooped up on wins. What's it going to take to beat this kid?
You know, I think we, number one, we got to step up our qualifying. ARCA gives qualifying points, so he got 15 on us again this weekend by sitting on the pole. So we got to get better at that. Everything else, I think we just got to keep doing what we're doing. Everybody, keep having great pit stops like we've had. Keep bringing fast cars to the track, and keep competing for wins like we did this weekend. It's going to shake out where it shakes out. So I'm looking forward to going down to the wire. I think this championship's going to be decided at Kansas. So, you know, it's just been neck and neck the whole year. I don't see it changing in the next two races. So I'm definitely fortunate to be with GMS Racing, where I feel like we have a legitimate shot at winning any of these three races coming up. They have a really good intermediate program.
Yes.
They have a really good short track program that we've proven. So I'm looking forward to each of these three races coming up.
Fantastic.
Hey, Tony, this
yes.
is Tim. Hey, I hate to butt in, Grant, because I know y'all on a roll, but Tina has one of her drag racing friends that was at Indianapolis this weekend. And, Grant, I want to thank you very much. We've got about 19 minutes left. But thank you very much for being a good friend of mine. And every time I ask you to come on the show, you come on. But, you know, we always give everybody a chance to thank their sponsors and people. And, Tony, if I can I let Mr. Grant Infinger thank everybody?
Please do that, and then we'll shoot it away with Miss Enterchare.
Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead, Grant.
I'd definitely like to thank everybody at GMS Racing. So Allegiant Travel, K-Site Motor Honey, he's stuck with me all year, you know, from Daytona. Worth USA, Portable Shade, Sure Tape, everybody that's involved with this GMS Racing team. So there's a lot of guys that have put forth a lot of effort to make this happen. So thankful for the opportunity and can't wait to get to Salem in a couple weeks.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Grant, for being a good friend of mine. And thank you very much. Every time I ask you to come on the show, you come on the show. I want to ask one favor, if that's okay.
That sounds good. What is it?
When you win this championship, will you come on my show first?
If as long as you get it worked out, I'm all ears. So you can call me, send me a text, whatever. I'm definitely good with that.
Okay, thank you very much, Grant, and good luck. Be safe. Tell I'm friends with Justin Boston, Mason Mingus. Tell everybody. Tell Will. Michael Lear, tell everybody we said hello, good luck, and we're pulling. I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it on the show because I can't be biased, but I'm pulling for you, bud, because you're one of my Bama buddies.
All right.
I'll leave
you. Good.
All right.
Take care,
thanks, Grant. Be safe,
thank you.
Bud.
Okay.
All right, bud, you're welcome. All right, Tony, that was Mr. Grant Infinger, winner this past weekend. He's good. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. And, you know, like he said, everything was not rolled in stone when he left Daytona. And now he's got 6 wins in the ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards. And my good friend Will Kimmel, I want to bring him up since we're talking about ARCA. He had something break again. I don't know what happened. But I talked to his granddad here at Talladega whenever I got to hang out with Will and Bill and Miss Pam Kimmel and Will's granddad said, that boy, if he didn't have no bad luck, he wouldn't have no luck at all. And I hate it for Will. But, Tony, let me go check on, I tell you what I'll do. I'll start a little old song right here. We got 16 minutes. I'm going to start a little old song, and I will go check
we'll come
on.
Come back with Tina and her yet.
Yes, sir. We're going to take a little break. We got 16 minutes. I've got Jimmy Lewis and Tina Stoll in the screening room. I tell you what I'll do. I'll play a song, and we'll all go to the screening room. How's that sound?
All right.
All right, here we go, bud. Here's the song.
All right.
travel on. There's one day here and the next day gone. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside every darkened door where blues won't haunt you anymore. Where the brave are free and lovers soar. Come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate to break down the garden gate. There's not much time left today.
Talladega, Alabama, you're back in the pit stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson and Miss Tina Stoll and Mr. Jimmy Lewis. How you doing tonight, Mr. Jimmy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. And at this time, I'm going to hand you over to Miss NHRA, Miss Tina Stoll. Y'all got the floor, boy.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Jimmy. Hey, thanks so much for calling in. I apologize for the lateness of bringing you on, but, man, I wanted to hear. I know that you were at Indy this week, and it was a wild week, and I was heartbroken not to be there, but I know that you chomped it out to the very last round and kind of wanted to hear a little bit about your input. So I appreciate you coming on. Greatest appreciation from me, so thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here and glad to get the call. Yeah, Indy was, as a normal Indy, it's a marathon. takes a week long to run, a little over a week. Actually, we get there on Sunday and run the final rounds on Monday afternoon. So it's a marathon, and looked kind of bad for us going into Indy because the weather, the forecast didn't look good at all, but turned out that it wasn't near as bad as they thought. We got some rain, but not near as much as we had originally anticipated. So we were fortunate there, and NHRA did a good job of keeping the track real good shape and also dealing with the schedule because of the few rain showers we had.
Well, you know, that track is always a it always amazes me. It can be clear as a day on the starting line and raining like hell on the finish line. And I know, look, going into this race, I thought it was going to be practically a no-go through Saturday, and it looks like they got quite a bit of racing in. So it looks like, how many qualifying passes did y'all end up with?
We actually had three. We had two on Wednesday and then one on Thursday, I believe, is how it went.
Well, at least that gives you enough information to go off of.
Yeah, two or three is enough for us. We should be able to dial our cars after that, after a couple of them, actually. Yeah, preferably one in each lane to see if there's any differences in lanes.
Well, I know you as a racer, and if you can do it off of three, I should be able to do it off of five. So I know you were probably good shape going into this. You started your rounds, not having been there and only kind of hearing partial information via the web and that. How was the track pretty consistent? It sounded a little bit like there was a lot of guessing off of what our weather systems were telling us and what the cars were actually doing.
It was pretty consistent. There was a little bit of some inconsistencies in 60-foot, things like that, but not real uncommon.
But nothing huge.
We watched the weather real close and constantly, so we were able to adjust accordingly.
Well, that's cool. Now, a lot of people don't realize you run Super Comp. You know, the pros, they're running theirs. They're running a 16-car field, which means four rounds. Now, when you start to get with the sportsmen, we're talking more like eight rounds. So, literally, you not only have to have your best day ever, you have to have your luckiest day ever. Because to be able to win, you know, I've always said to win eight rounds in a row is like being able to flip a quarter eight times and having it land on the side. It's extremely tough because there's so many challenges in it. You having to go into this to win eight rounds, what is your mental attitude? Can you let yourself think too far ahead or?
Well, I don't. I just one round at a time is all I look at, and who's coming up next, and you know the weather, of course, and how I'm going to dial, and what I'm going to put in the delay box. Just the normal things that every racer looks at, and like I say, for me, it's one round at a time. I can't look too far ahead because then you get ahead of yourself and you make mistakes on your current run.
Now, can you shut out the fact that this is Indy, that this is the big go, this is the race, or is it a matter of just like kind of keeping that balance, keep the, you know, the excitement of that in balance with the realistic thing of that you're right, it is any other race. It just is a race, but holding off the Indy, because I know it's such a big deal. It's so huge on just the arena, the everything is so big. It's hard to block that out.
Well, and for me, it is just another race. That's the only way I look at it. It's a little bit bigger check at the end, but it's just seven or eight rounds, depending on how many cars you start with, of course, and like I say, it's just one round at a time.
Now, here's what I have to tell everybody who doesn't know drag racing really well. That is an expert speaking because somebody, you know, you'll be told from day one when you get your little license and you go to the track, they'll go seat time, seat time, seat time because it's experience. Being able to stay calm in the storm. Jimmy has raced everywhere. He's won everywhere. And being able to block that out is huge because there is just to not let the circumstances overwhelm you is a huge deal. If you could buy that in a can, I would have bought a case of it. So anyhow, well, you did awesome all the way through. You know, your average reaction time was incredible. I was looking at the stats today trying to grind away. You know, I'm always looking at stuff going, why is he winning and I'm not? And I have to admit, I looked at it, I go, well, okay, that's a good point. Had awesome reaction times all the way through everything. Comparatively, you know, and what a lot of people won't realize is that reaction time is a lot controlled by the driver. You know, we have a little bit of ability to, you know, play with that a little bit by changing what's in our box and stuff, but it's critical in, you know, not over-guessing because you lose at that point. Going through this race, what was your strategy and what's your break, you know, your kind of breakdown of how the race went?
Well, the strategy always is to, you know, have a good reaction time, of course, and to run close to the number, as close as you can, and, of course, get the win light. And that's pretty much what I went with all weekend, all week. And
hey, Mr. Lewis, I hate to interrupt you. We're coming up on the end of the show here, and I want to thank you very much for coming on. And thank you very much, Miss Tina. And maybe we can get you back on at a later date when we don't run over.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Okay. You're very welcome, and have a great night.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
When you get the choice to sit it out or die.